Steve. Thanks very much. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We have a show to put on for you. Can I let the audience in on a little secret? Are you okay with this?
I don't know what it is, so I'll say yes now.
Well, Henry Winkler will be dropping by the show later. We'll talk to Henry Winkler, and one of us is a little bit nervous about this visit from Henry Winkler.
I am having agita.
Because why? Because
he's Henry Winkler.
But he's everybody says that he is the kindest man in all of show business land.
I know, Bill. But
I've interviewed him before. He is the nicest man in all of show business.
That's
land.
What people are saying. He's not. Henry Winkler would not hurt you.
I don't think he's going to hurt me. I'm just going to sit here and be such a fangirl. I just want to watch you interview him.
But don't you think if you're Henry Winkler, and he's been Henry Winkler for a long time, don't you think that he's accustomed to that? That everywhere he goes, people, their mouths drop open, they point.
But I'm supposed to be a professional.
Nobody expects that.
We gave up on that a long time ago.
I just loved him from the day I saw him.
Isn't he it's impossible to not love Henry Winkler. Have you ever talked to anybody where you go, Henry Winkler, and they go, I could take him or leave him.
I've never heard that.
Nobody.
Remember the movie, was it Heroes he was in?
Yes.
That was great.
Yes. Yes.
Wow, I can't believe you guys both remembered that.
I'm telling you, I'm a super fan.
When he was doing Happy Days and people kind of only knew him as the greaser from the 50s, all of a sudden they put him in a movie called The One and Only, and they put him in Heroes. And then eventually he did Night Shift, which I said yesterday, and I stand by this, and I'll tell him this. I think it's one of the funniest movies ever made. It's just so great.
I'd agree with you.
He and Michael Keaton are just hysterical in it.
That deserves a rewatching, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Yeah.
I just am nervous. I'm sorry.
You're going to be. It's really funny because, and you know this. You've told me this, and I agree with you. The only guests we ever have on that make you nervous are musicians.
Yes.
And Henry Winkler.
Pretty much.
But why would that be?
Well, musicians, because I just love what they do.
Yeah.
I am just really a super fan of music.
Yeah.
And Henry Winkler is Henry
Winkler.
He is
Henry Winkler.
I mean, we've talked to many celebrities in the past.
Yes.
Hugh Grant was one of them. I wasn't really that nervous.
No reason to be nervous. He was nervous.
George Carlin, I was a little nervous. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's because you weren't with me.
Oh.
Remember,
you were
on the day
on
off. Yeah. Picked a great day to...
The two guests that you've had on that I've always wanted to talk to, and now I can't because they've both passed on, are George Carlin and
Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman from Saturday Night Live.
Yep. You planned your vacations very,
very
poorly.
Very poorly. I looked at the schedule. I go, here's one of my idols. I'll be elsewhere. That makes sense. Twice in 2 years I did that. Don't be nervous. He's just going to be lovable. That's all he's going to be, is lovable.
But, you know, I'm going to want to hug him when he comes in, and
sure,
that'll be awkward when I won't let go.
Yes. Let's limit the hug to a two-minute hug. At the two-minute mark.
2 minutes?
Yeah. At the two-minute mark, I'll just tip
all
my
right
cap a little bit, and you'll go, oh, wow, that was a fast 2 minutes.
I curled my hair.
You look
took a shower
today, by the way, Wendy.
Thank you.
You don't have your leather jacket on.
No.
You usually wear your black leather for, you know.
Well, that
I thought for
been...
sure for the Fonz you'd have
you
that.
You can't out black leather Henry Winkler.
I thought about it.
That could be bad form, though, couldn't it? If you come dressed like Fonzie.
That would be bad.
Well, I did think about
it. But she
it
does wear it.
I know.
But I haven't worn the black leather yet because it's been summer.
Oh, right, right. Can't break it out
And it's usually
yet
really cold in this studio, so
right,
I typically always have a jacket on. But I did think about wearing the black leather, and I thought, No. So I hope you like my leather pink jumpsuit, Pinky Tuscadero.
Yeah, in tribute to Pinky, the great Pinky Tuscadero. You know what you should do that would impress him is pretend like one of the machines here doesn't work, like your monitor's not working or a computer, and then just bang on it, and then it'll work. And then just go, huh? Look, I can do what you can do. That'll win him over.
That's how I was going to start the interview. I was going to hit him.
No, don't. It says
just
in his
Bill
form.
Yeah,
did the word nerd come from Happy Days?
I think it did.
I think it did, too.
And the opposite.
Dren.
Do you remember that episode, Wendy?
That was from Joni.
Yep. Joni fell in love with Anson Williams, with Patsy Weber. And
who wouldn't?
It's impossible not to. And all of a sudden, the word Dren came up because... Was it he who was the opposite of a nerd, Steve?
Yeah,
is that right?
I think he was the one. You're not a nerd, you're the opposite.
You're a
Dren.
And America's heart melted. Wendy, look who's here. It's John Williams. Does he make you nervous?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You look great, by the way. You look terrific.
There's a lot of that going around,
you.
Wendy.
I just heard you guys talking about awkward hugs.
Yes.
And I just got a book called The Awkward Hug.
Oh, you did? What is that about?
It's by one of the New Yorker cartoonists, and every page is a depiction of an awkward hug, and then the adjoining page is a description of it. And they don't have the radio host hugging a celebrity she pines for hug.
Yeah.
But that could be a thing.
That won't let go during the whole interview.
I thought 2 minutes was a lot.
Is 2 minutes too long for what it is? Because you have loved him for 40 years.
I think four seconds.
I think that's even a little long.
Kind of. It depends on how you roll with it.
Tell John who I have hugged.
It's such a weird thing because Bill is not really a hugger. We've only hugged maybe two times in our lives, and it's when something
sad was happening. They were both accidental hugs.
He's not a hugger other than his family, but Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo, do you know who that is? Machete?
You hugged him, which was weird.
Still not working for me.
Yeah.
Somebody you admired or wanted to see. Huh?
No, yeah, but he's just this bad guy.
He's a really big bad man. Okay. He plays a big bad man. Right. He's a very nice big bad man.
He is pretty nice. Yeah. Michael Rooker, who...
I hugged Michael Rooker.
You know, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer with The Walking Dead.
You got to hug a guy like that.
And
just to be on the safe side.
Stevie Van Zandt.
I hugged him also.
Little Steven.
Yeah. I'm sure he gets that. For men and women. I mean, if you're a rockin' dude.
Yeah.
But the three you've hugged are the three strange, like...
It's very uncared. Yeah,
they're not they're not high in the huggable list.
No, right. They wouldn't
be. I got a thigh squeeze from Marie Osmond.
Did you?
And wow.
I tell a lot of people that.
That's not bad. You know who's at the top of my hug list? My favorite hug of all time was the late Don Rickles. I got to hug him, and boy,
sweet.
Was that was magical.
Well, we love us some Henry Winkler at my house.
Yeah.
Especially with the holiday movie season starting.
Do you agree, though, John? Who could not love Henry Winkler? Who would see Henry Winkler and go, nah, no thanks?
All the roles he's played, too. He's just like affable and daffy at times.
Yes.
What a great guy.
Yeah. So. Not helping.
Is this making you more nervous?
Nervous, yes.
What? No, John's here to comfort you, not make you more nervous.
Oh, no, I'm not here to help.
Oh, you're not?
No.
I know we want to talk about the hug book.
Inclusion of her hug in, I'm going to tell the author, you should meet my friend.
Oh, okay. That's so fun.
It'll go well. It'll be great.
Yeah.
It'll
now
great.
I'm not going to hug him. You just ruined
him. You have to. No, now you have to.
Well, I think you're supposed to ask for permission now anyway.
Right.
We do that. I noticed that a lot of the photos that Jasmine takes that we post on our social media, I always say to the guest, I just kind of go to put my arm around their waist and I go, do you mind? And they're like, no, you don't touch anyone.
No.
You're just kind of standing there.
Well, I always give them some forms to fill out, and then by the time I get them back, they're gone. You know,
well,
the guest
is a new me.
Left.
I mean, when I do the podcast pick that you're describing, I don't even touch. And
nothing.
If it's, I was at a friend's house. Shut up, Steve. I was at a friend's house a few weekends ago. We're friends. We've cruised together, that.
When you say cruise.
Yeah, like cruising that
Steve
movie.
Steve Bertrand Travel at SteveBertrandTravel.com.
That's not what I meant, but thank you.
I said, hey, is it okay if I give you a hug? And she goes, I mean, we're friends, but it's my new preliminary.
Now, you know Steve's policy on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He will spoon with a guest, but he will not hug the guest. He's very strange in that way. I don't understand that.
It's confining otherwise. People don't like to be confined.
If you're really tall, Steve, you could envelope them.
Right. He ladles them. He doesn't even spoon them. He ladles them.
Like a ladle. Yeah. I love it.
It's spooning to a spoon. Okay, I'm done now.
All right, John Williams.
You come back later and do a show?
By the way, John has no idea how much and how he really hugs. He's got an idea in his head, but it's not in real world.
You think he hugs less than he thinks or more than he thinks?
You seem like a hugger to me, John.
I had to be his hug police before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At an event.
How many years ago was this?
It was the day we did our show. I'm thinking of the same event, Steve.
There were several.
It was one of the times was when we were at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Yes.
And there were some listeners there. End of story.
Are you mentioned in this hugging book, John? Do they talk about this at all?
No, in fact, I do think there are a lot of hugs that she doesn't mention that could be included. But there's of them that are, you know, I don't know a lot of the circumstances, but one of them was, say you're divorced and now you meet again at a family event. What are you going to do, shake their hand?
Right.
But you're not going to not embrace, so you have this sort of awkward robot hug.
Yes.
There's a million of them.
Oh, I'm positive. Yeah.
Hey, if I'm taking the time and putting out the effort to give a hug, it's not going to be awkward. I mean, really, if you're going to do it,
Coming in.
I'm half Italian. We've hugged everyone
our
whole
lives.
I
think you embrace it.
Go for it.
For 2 minutes?
All right, maybe that's too long.
4 seconds.
Maybe that's
four
too long.
Seconds.
Let him be the arbitrator of time. Let him say.
Of course, if he's kind of using the extended fingertips to push away gently, then you've already crossed the line.
I have never had that happen to me. Ever.
Not yet.
Okay.
Day
you
is very
off,
young.
As it were.
Oh,
John,
I'm still
thanks.
Leaving. Goodbye.
We'll see you on the show later.
Yeah.
All right, that's John Williams. We'll take a quick break and then more of us, Bill and Wendy. It's WGN. If you're just tuning in, we're a little excited here on the show because one of our idols, Henry Winkler, will be stopping by later on. Wendy's a little bit nervous. It's understandable. He is Henry Winkler.
Here's what the deal is.
Yes?
Every girl wanted to date him and every guy wanted to be him.
Yep.
So, yeah.
You're right.
There's a lot to be nervous
about.
No,
you're absolutely right. Some texts have come in, Wendy. Let me read them to you one at a time. Henry Winkler, this is from somebody in 618. Henry Winkler is as cute now as the first time I saw him, which was a small part that he had on Mary Tyler Moore's show. Do you remember the instance with Henry Winkler and Mary Tyler Moore? Keep in mind, this is pre-Fonzie Henry Winkler.
No, I do not remember that moment.
Mary was having a dinner party, and as they established on the show, whenever she had a dinner party at her place, something went wrong. It never played out well. And in this one, she didn't have enough food for everybody, but somehow Rhoda brought a guest, a date, who was played by Henry Winkler, and there wasn't even room to sit him at the table, so they just sat him at a side table, like a kid's table across the room.
By himself.
By himself, and every once in a while they would say, is everything okay? And he would signal that it was.
I would picture Rhoda with a guy like Henry Winkler.
Yeah,
the late, great Valerie Harper.
Yes, yes, yes. This is something to Steve. What Steve's question was earlier about the word nerd and whether or not it originated on Happy Days. Somebody on 312 says, we were using the word nerd back in the late 1950s and the early 1960s. I didn't know that. I thought that that was just a word that they invented for the show. But apparently it was based on real life.
Yeah, I don't think they invented it.
No. I guess not. Not if somebody was using it pre-Happy Days.
But now it's such a compliment, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Is it? I guess it's acceptable.
Do you think that show would have happened if the movie American Graffiti didn't happen? Because that's the movie that George Lucas made that kind of rekindled any interest in the 50s. I mean, there were people who lived through
it. Movie.
It was a great movie, but I have to think, coming off the success of that movie, every TV producer was scrambling to find something similar to it, and Happy Days won. That was the one that was most.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Do you remember where Happy Days came from originally?
It was a Love American Style.
I'm so impressed. I'm so impressed.
Wow, I'd love to see that.
Love American Style.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was a little snippet. Yep. I remember that.
Well, who were the characters?
The only ones that were on both versions, I believe, were Ron Howard and Anson Williams. I don't think anybody else made the transition. The characters were the same, but like I remember Harold Gould played Mr. Cunningham instead of Tom Bosley. I don't remember who played Mrs. Cunningham. I don't think Ralph Malph was on the episode.
I still got it.
And how about some interesting casting for who played Ralph Malph's father on Happy Days? Do you remember this?
Howard Sprague.
Jack Dodson, the actor who played Howard Sprague on The Andy Griffith Show.
Are you proud of me again?
I'm so proud. That's fantastic. So you got this going on. You can't be nervous about Henry Winkler. You're
Except
firing
we can't
at all
talk about Happy Days.
I guess not.
And I understand that. And you have to mention Fonzie. You got to. I'm sorry. Icon.
Yeah.
Icon.
Yeah.
Icon. But he has done so much work since then. And I don't know. When I watched Happy Days, it's like, the Fonz couldn't get any cooler. Henry Winkler couldn't get any better. That was not true because he is just amazing right now.
Right. You didn't realize because he was so good playing that role that you didn't realize just how talented he was until you saw him do many other things.
Exactly.
I still, to this day, think there. I don't know if you remember this episode, but there was an episode, I think it was a Christmas episode or Thanksgiving or a Christmas episode of Happy Days, where they wanted to invite Fonzie to the Cunningham home, and he insisted that he had all kinds of other plans, all other things to do. And then you see him sitting alone by himself on the holiday.
Opening up a can of something. It was so, I cried.
Oh, it was so great. It was, I mean, the episode was great, not the fact that he was alone on the holidays. That's not great. But boy, did he took a character that was probably written very one-dimensionally and just made it three-dimensional, and that's not the easiest thing to do all the time.
Does he know what happened to the oldest?
Chuck Cunningham.
Yeah, everybody that we talked to Marianne Ross, we asked her.
Yes.
She didn't know. No one knows. He just disappeared.
There was an episode of Happy Days where Chuck goes upstairs And then he just never came downstairs ever again. And even, I think I've told you this, on the last episode of Happy Days, where Howard is toasting everybody, he says to Marion how lucky they are to have so many great friends and a great son and a great daughter. And I was at home going, Chuck's still upstairs. You got to reference Chuck. He's been upstairs for 6 years.
Maybe he was abducted by aliens, and maybe he surfaces in Henry Winkler's New Kids book, Alien Superstar.
Oh, you tied it all together. That was fantastic.
You just don't know. We're also going to talk to Dean Richards today.
I'm nervous about that.
Why do you make fun of me so much? There's never been a guest that we've had that you've been a little nervous about because you're just so excited to see them. Bertrand, what about you?
Yeah, I used to be, when I was interviewing authors and things, I never liked talking to comedians.
Because why?
Because they never really talk to you.
Oh, I guess.
Very rarely.
I guess.
Steve Bertrand filled in for you a couple of times, and there were some comedians. And Steve, you know, who normally is not afraid to talk on the mic, was just not participating that much. And the weirdest thing, Steve, and I'm sorry, I'll never forget this, Nick Swardson was in.
Oh, he's very funny.
And Bertrand, your son, I think, liked him or was a fan. So Bertrand's holding his phone like this, videotaping
shooting a video of it.
But didn't, unbeknownst to Nick Swardson.
Covertly?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think I did it secretly.
Oh.
Well, I think you kind of did.
Well.
It made me laugh.
Did that make things better, Steve, or not as good?
No, that's just, I've never, this just, that always makes me uncomfortable, which is weird because I work with all you guys in radio, but.
Right.
It is, you know, a comedian is difficult. I'm very happy that you're here when we talk to comedians.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
Chelsea Handler once.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she finished the interview. She looked at me. She goes, well, that was unusual. I'm not usually serious. Because, I mean, I don't want people to sit there and do their routine,
sure,
right?
Sure, right.
And that's what comedians usually do. So I don't think she enjoyed my conversation with her.
When you have a comic on, and Wendy, maybe your theory is different, but I always think you can do one of two things. You can either set them up.
I never would have known that. There were certain people like big time celebrities, like Gilbert Gottfried, there are Emo Phillips. These are people you say to them, hey, is there anything you want me to set up?
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know to ask that.
Well, I think it puts them, for most comics, at a level where they're on familiar ground, and then it sometimes goes better. So that's one way of doing it. Or the other way, Steve, is what you did with Chelsea Handler, which has come at it from a different direction that they're not used to, because then they can't just go on autopilot. They have to really supply the answers.
Right. I think you want to find out something about the people, not what they're going to do at Janie's that night.
Right.
Howard Stern does a great job with that, talking to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the whole key, is listening to what they say.
Right.
Instead of just having a list of questions like I do for Henry Winkler. So this should very well.
Can you just read me one of the questions?
No,
you don't
I
want
really
to read them.
Do 13. What's 13?
I don't. But I've heard people do interviews, you know, and when you're just starting out, when I just started out in radio, you had a list of questions.
Yeah.
And you were nervous. So you'd ask the question, they'd answer, and then you'd just move right on to the next question.
Right. Regardless of what they say.
It's like you just kind of wait for them to stop talking and then go to your next question. And then as you do this, you have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the time you don't even go to those questions.
Right.
It's just, you know, musicians and Henry Winkler. I know it's a weird combo. But these are people that just make me very nervous.
Well, I think it's based on the fact that you admire them so much.
Yes, it is.
And you want this moment to be one that you'll remember forever. So
I don't want to be the nerd. I'd like to be a Dren today, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Henry Winkler will be here.
Hopefully. Wait, today?
I will still be here at 11:05. We'll talk to Dean Richards as well. All right, we are back and we are happening. And Henry Winkler will be in the studio with us at 11:05. Along with Lynn Oliver, they have written a book together, and they're going to be making an appearance.
It's in Naperville tomorrow.
Yes, through Anderson's Bookshop. It is at Naperville's Community Christian Church, and we'll tell you how to get tickets and everything for that event.
Wendy, I am on cosmopolitan.com, as I find myself frequently.
Popular Mechanics online right now, but whatever.
They may have switched our subscription.
Bill, those are very nice pictures of you, too,
Thank
on
you,
cosmopolitan.com.
You're more than kind.
Thank you
so much.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I found on cosmopolitan.com. that I think you'll enjoy, with Halloween just a few weeks away. Cosmopolitan has chosen the number one costume of the year, every year from 1950 on.
Does it have sexy in it?
No, that's a fairly new concept, Wendy. Back in the 50s, no costume was sexy.
It was called matronly.
Right, right.
A matronly waitress.
No, yes. Actually, it was called a children's holiday.
Right, back then it was a children's holiday. But now it's been taken over by the pervs, Wendy, so all the costumes are sexy. In 1950,
can I just please stop you for 1 minute?
Yes.
You told us all about the sexy Mr. Rogers costume.
That's a real thing. I'm not making that up.
I looked at it, and I can't get it out of my mind.
Yeah.
It's indelible,
isn't
it? Terrible.
Yeah, I know.
All right, back to you.
I still remember my favorite, not from last year, but from 2 years ago. I will never forget that this costume exists. Sexy chipmunk. Because that's redundant, isn't it? If you're one, you're probably the other.
Good point.
In 1951, Wendy, the most popular costume was that of Alice in Wonderland.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep. People loved the movie. The kids wanted to be, mostly girls, but not entirely girls, wanted to be Alice from Alice in Wonderland. In 1952, another movie inspired a costume. You'll find that back then, and I guess today, it was mostly movies that inspired the most popular Halloween costume of the year. Some TV, too, but mostly movies. In 1952, they went from Alice in Wonderland to the characters from Singing in the Rain. It was not unusual to just wear a rain slicker and an umbrella, and that was your costume in 1952.
Now you have to wear a winter coat and something, because it's like you just never know what the temperature is
right.
going to be.
Right.
I'm surprised Rosie the Riveter wasn't one of the costumes then.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I may do that this year.
1953, another Disney character, Peter Pan. Not just Peter Pan, but Peter Pan, Wendy, John, Michael, Tinkerbell, Captain Hook, all those dominated. Those were the most popular ones in 1953. In 1954, this is a hard costume to pull off. You really have to go all in if you're going to be this. Godzilla.
Wow.
Was the number one costume in 1954.
I find that confusing because I don't recall having like a completely covered up outfit.
Right.
As a costume
right.
that early.
No, that kind of came later,
yeah,
normally,
I would
right?
think.
Yeah. They don't show any. In Cosmopolitan, they just show a picture of Godzilla from the movie Godzilla. I would love to see how primitive it must have looked to dress like Godzilla in the 1950s.
Yeah.
I would imagine you'd have to do something to differentiate it from just being a dinosaur or similar.
Yeah.
You know, a giant lizard.
And there was no Spirit Halloween store.
No, not back then. Nope. Nope. In 1955, this is an interesting one, another movie-inspired costume, James Dean's character in Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah, I bet that's still used sometimes.
Yeah. Although you'd have to explain to a kid, I mean, if you're going to an adult party dressed like James Dean, then it's self-explanatory, but how many kids are going to be James Dean this year? Not that many.
Yeah, good
I'll
point.
Take the under. In 1956, the characters from The King and I,
shall we dance, tra-la-la-la.
Yes. That was a lovely musical interlude.
Thank you very much.
I didn't expect that. In 1957, you're not going to like this. Julie Andrews' portrayal of Cinderella in the CBS version of Cinderella inspired many girls to play that role for Halloween, Julie Andrews. Or Cinderella, Julie Andrews.
Had Mary Poppins come out yet? What year are we in?
Mary Poppins came out later.
Oh, okay.
That was in the early 60s. So you may get a double dose of Julie Andrews, ruining your Halloweens forever. Here's a strange one. I can't imagine kids dressing up as this, but in 1958, characters from the Alfred Hitchcock movie Vertigo dominated Halloween.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of little girls loved Kim Novak back then. They wanted to dress like Kim Novak's character from Vertigo or Jimmy Stewart.
My neighbor's daughter, Louise, dressed up as Tippi Hedren from The Birds one year, and she had her hair kind of ratted and fake birds were it. It was
cool.
The best costume ever.
I saw somebody that did that, too. It was hilarious. And then they had little fake birds.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
She got pecked to death, didn't she?
Her character. Well,
yeah.
No,
spoiler alert.
Tippi Hedren's character did not.
Oh, she did.
Yeah, she survived.
She survived. But Suzanne Pleshette didn't fare quite as well.
Hi, Bob.
Oh, that was bad.
Hi, birds.
Her eyeball. Oh,
yeah. That was pretty freaky.
That was a bad day.
Oh, man.
That was a very bad day. In 1959, I'm surprised it took this long, but Marilyn Monroe was the number one Halloween costume in 1959.
Duh.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it be?
People still do it.
I They do, right? That's as timeless as you can get if you're a movie fan. In 1960, another Alfred... If you had told me that within a very short span of time, two Alfred Hitchcock movies would be the impetus for the number one Halloween costume, I never would have believed you. But in 1960, it was the character Marion Crane and, of course, Anthony Perkins' character, you know, Norman Bates, from Psycho.
Wow. That's
it's hard
movie.
To do the Janet Leigh one because you're not wearing a lot of clothes. You're just in the shower fending off an attack.
It works perfectly if you're going to a party in a shower.
Well, no, guys. You have to be creative. You have to take a shower curtain and wrap it around you.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Then scissors. You
can do it. No, don't get the scissors.
And your friend can be Alfred Hitchcock hitting on you the whole night. Just for accuracy reasons. In 1961, again, this seems like a hard sell for kids because Halloween in the 60s was primarily a kid's holiday. Yeah, there were Halloween parties, but would you think that a child would dress like the character Holly Golightly from Breakfast at Tiffany's?
No. But now, this is in Cosmopolitan, so these aren't adult costumes?
Well, they're just saying the number one costume of the year. They're not breaking it down much beyond that. I'm guessing if you were going to do that character, if you were going to do Breakfast at Tiffany's, it's more than likely an adult. I can't imagine too many kids wanting to be that character from Breakfast at Tiffany's. I could be wrong. In 1962, finally some political influence on the number one Halloween costumes. For guys, it was John F. Kennedy. For women, it was Jacqueline Kennedy.
Now, Jacqueline, I could see how you did it because she had a certain style, but how do you do JFK?
That, not easy.
Get a short cropped haircut.
Right.
A suit.
Right.
Talk like you're from Boston. Which I can't do,
and when your wife's not looking.
Wow, I thought you were him there for a second.
You fooled Steve.
And when your wife's not looking, what?
You fool around on her.
You're mean. Hi, Nancy.
Allegedly.
Nancy, you have a good costume idea for this year?
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Great, thank you. Yourself?
Good, pretty good. Yes, there is a Bernie Sanders mask.
Well, sure there is. Of course there is. Anyone running has a mask, don't they?
Yeah.
I think they do.
Is that what you're going to dress up as?
Yeah, I probably will, Wendy. You know, I'm out here in McChesney Park, which is outside of Rockford. And I believe, I'm going to be doing some political things, as I usually do. I'm helping a candidate run for office. But I do think I'm going to get the Bernie Sanders mask.
Well, good for you. You have a great Halloween, and we thank you for calling and listening. We appreciate it. McChesney.
Wendy, that is a preview of tomorrow's segment, the number one Halloween costumes in McChesney Park. I wanted to build toward that. I didn't want to open with that, but we'll do that on tomorrow's show. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll take you a little further down the road. What are the number one Halloween costumes every year? This, according to Cosmopolitan Magazine. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He did the monster mash.
Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder. Just a quick reminder, right after the news, Henry Winkler and Lynn Oliver will be joining us live in studio. They have a new book, Alien Superstar. Steve?
Just said hello to him, Wendy. I'm scared for you.
Stop it.
Did he say he was going to make Wendy nervous when he comes in? Did he mention that, Steve?
No.
He didn't say that? All right.
Hi. Stop it, Bertrand. It's making me...
He's a very nice man.
I know.
Honestly, I just was talking to him. He's a very nice man.
Good for you.
I warned him.
All right. See, that's what I don't like is I know you said something like one of the hosts is really nervous.
I wouldn't do that to you, Wendy.
Yes, you so would.
I will never do it again.
Dan has called us. Dan, you have a great idea for a Halloween costume for this year, correct?
Yes. Especially for Chicagoland, that would be Chance the Snapper.
Oh, yeah. You can't miss with that.
I love it.
Timely.
Come trick-or-treating at our house.
Thanks, Dan. Wendy, in 1963, you'll be pleased to know that the number one costume was Lucille Ball's character from The Lucy Show.
Any particular character? Because the one where she was eating chocolates, that's a good one with the hat.
That's from I Love Lucy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This was the later version, the Desi Free Lucy. So I'm sure the Mr. Mooney costume was very popular with the boys.
Yes, it was. Lucy Carmichael, was that when she was?
Yes, yes. In 1964, the lovely Elizabeth Taylor was the number one Halloween costume.
Cleopatra?
It just says Elizabeth Taylor, but my guess is because Cleopatra came out right around then, it was probably inspired by Cleopatra, but they just said Elizabeth Taylor. Finally, some rock musicians get involved in 1965. You want to guess who?
65.
Not the Guess Who, by the way.
Buddy Holly.
Nope.
I have no
classic
idea.
Rock band, popular then,
the
popular
Beatles.
Now. Nope.
The Monkees.
Nope. The Rolling Stones.
I was going to say that, but I didn't think that.
You would think that the Beatles or possibly the Monkees in 1965, although the Monkees were still a couple years away.
Yeah, but it's harder to dress as the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, right.
Then, I mean, the Beatles, they were easy.
Well, maybe if somebody had a leftover rooster costume, you'd just throw that on and you're Mick Jagger. It's very simple. In 1966, even though the show wasn't immensely popular, it was a cult television show. The number one Halloween costume in 1966 were characters from Star Trek.
What year was that?
1966.
Wow, that seems early for me, but I guess that's when...
Yeah, that's when it was on.
Jeez.
In 1967, another TV show inspired the top costume, I Dream of Jeannie. No navel.
Yeah, isn't that
no
wild?
No navel, please.
But
too much.
That was probably one of the sexiest of costumes.
Without a doubt. Yeah, right. Well, the Elizabeth Taylor one probably was, but certainly the...
And Marilyn Monroe.
And Marilyn Monroe, without a doubt. In 1968, also very sexy, Casper.
The friendly ghost.
I think I might have been Casper once.
Steve, can I tell you something funny? Because this is when I saw this, this reminded me. We have a picture, a Halloween picture from 1968 of Casper, and I can't remember for the life of me if it was my brother or me, or now maybe even you, Steve.
With the plastic?
Yeah, the Collegeville costumes.
With the rubber band over your ear?
Yeah, I was Wendy, oddly enough.
Oh.
I really was.
Oh, that's a perfect costume for you.
I hated those stupid plastic masks.
Awful.
You couldn't see.
Right.
You couldn't breathe. And the most important thing is you couldn't eat candy.
Wait, you couldn't do any of those things.
So you couldn't do anything. But then the worst was you'd cry because it would break.
The elastic would break on your third house.
Once you could breathe and eat, it was broken.
That's true. I mean, you'd have to like put it up on the top of your head to eat, or you could just put it underneath. And that's when you'd pull it out a little to eat a milk dud. And that's when the string would
break. Gone. I think they made them that way on purpose.
I think I only wore one of those plastic masks one year, and then my mom went into overdrive, and I was an angel one year, I was a devil the next year, I was a hobo for like 4 years.
Were you really four years
in a
row?
It was just easy. No, probably not, but you know, you'd get a broomstick, and you'd take a red bandana and put something in it, and it would be like the stick you had over your back.
Yeah.
And I was a clown one year.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hand-me-down. That's just the outfit that we had, the costume.
But now today, when you see a kid, with all due respect, I know moms and dads work very hard on some costumes, but whenever you see a clown or a hobo now, you say, oh, your parents must have spent 5 or 10 seconds on this. They didn't really think this out, did they?
I think the costumes are getting way more elaborate for kids.
Yeah.
One year, I was very proud of, Michael was a skeleton, and I took a black sweatsuit and took white duct tape and made all the bones on the front and back. That was a
ambitious.
Lot of work. Yeah. And that same year, Dylan was the man with the yellow hat, and he held
Kyle
a little
Hendrick.
Curious George.
Wait, who's Steve?
Kyle Hendrick.
Kyle Hendrick.
Yeah, he looks just like the man in the yellow hat.
The Cubs pitcher Kyle Hendrick?
Think We're about Sox fans.
Yeah, I know, but think about it.
But I spray painted a straw hat yellow, and I found the same shirt.
Oh, that's excellent.
So that was the one year I worked hard on it. And Cookie Monster I made one year.
Yep. I did good ones for my daughter. Oh, my gosh.
What were they?
She was a giraffe one year.
Wow.
It's her favorite animal. You know, I made the big head, and she could see out the front. And then I had, I sewed, like, sweatpants with, brown spots all over it. And she was a barricade one year. That was great.
A barricade.
Well, it was always traffic related, you know, so she was... She was a barricade.
That's so
she
fun.
Won like something. She had some great ones. She was
The beautiful thing about being a barricade for Halloween is you know wherever you go, you're not going to run into another kid dressed as a barricade.
No.
That's it. You're the only barricade.
I have seen a lot of the Coach Q's that have been dead on with that full bushy mustache.
Yep, those are great. In 1969, Wendy, another icon from the world of rock and roll. I think you may have guessed this one earlier.
Beatles?
Not the Beatles.
Elton John?
No.
Buddy Holly.
1969.
Buddy Holly.
Elvis Presley.
Oh, I didn't guess that earlier. There's still people dressing as Elvis every year, and sometimes not on Halloween.
Right, right. In 1970, your guess finally came true. It was the Beatles. They were the number one Halloween costume. Now, I have to say this. My next-door neighbor, they had four sons, and two of them were the Beatles, and the costume was a very generic, you couldn't tell which of the four it was, and then it was a vest that said the Beatles with the Beatles logo. Because that's what the Beatles always wore when they were just walking around
town. It was like their jersey. It said the Beatles.
They wore a shirt that said the Beatles. Well, any of those costumes of that era, they would have to reinforce, you know, just because the worst thing you can hear when you're a kid on Halloween is, who are you supposed to be?
What adult asks that? If you don't know, don't ask.
I know, but there's still adults who ask that. And nothing crushes a kid's spirits on Halloween. They dream about that costume, and then some adult goes, I don't know who you are. You an astronaut? Are you a clown? I don't know what you are. What are you? Who are you?
Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
All right, so we're on 1971. Now, somehow, even though this is one of my two favorite movies of all time, I didn't know such a costume existed, because I certainly would have been this, but Willy Wonka from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I don't even remember seeing any kids dressed like Willy Wonka back then. I see it now as an adult. I see adult costumes of Willy Wonka, but I don't remember that being a thing
either,
in 1971.
Because you would have been it.
In 1972, Wendy, my other favorite movie, The Godfather. Those are my two favorite movies.
I thought you were going to be Old Yeller, maybe. But
so they were just obviously being Marlon Brando.
Yeah,
kids talking would, like that.
Yeah, they could put all the candy they got from the first few houses in their cheeks
once the mask broke.
Right. Now, I don't even think they did masks for the Godfather.
No, sure, no.
I think you just had to build that on your own, right? In 1973, they're very specific, and again, this is one that I'm going to throw a challenge flag on, because I don't think this is accurate, but one of the Brady Bunch, but it's not the one you think. Like, if you would
Alice.
Think, no, I would, actually, Alice makes more sense, but a lot of kids had said in 1973.
Kitty
Carryall. No, it's Marcy Marcia.
That's the one, that would have been my first guess.
With the broken nose?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you're going to be Marcia, go, ooh, my nose, Marcia, right? Jan Brady, they say, was the number one Halloween costume of 1973. Did you or any of your friends dress like Jan Brady in 1973 for Halloween?
Well, I did, but not at Halloween.
She was big then, though.
Jan
with
was
the whole nose thing.
No,
Marcia was.
Well, she said, Bill said that most people dressed as Jan.
What did Jan do, though, that you could, well, besides wear the glasses? I mean, there wasn't much.
Right.
Marcia.
Well, you could talk, yeah.
She had the imaginary friend George Glass, and I was George Glass that year for Halloween, very popular.
Because you were dreaming.
I just didn't show up anywhere. I just stayed home.
You didn't even go to school?
No, I didn't go to school. So I'm throwing down the challenge flag on Jan Brady. I don't think that one's true. In 1974, characters from The Great Gatsby were the number one Halloween costume.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one still if you want to do it.
That holds up.
I was a flapper one year. Yeah, I was.
For Halloween?
Yeah, but I didn't associate it with The Great Gatsby. What?
I just thought it's a side job, Mary. Maybe you need some.
She does like to dance.
That is shocking to
my
me.
My grandma made it.
Steve is shocked by the idea that you would be a flapper for Halloween.
Why?
How old were you?
I don't know. I was a teenager. It was black with white fringe.
Can you still do the dance?
I didn't dance. I don't remember what I wonder what shoes I had on, now that I'm thinking about it.
Your flapper shoes.
Yeah, what do you wear?
Everybody wore flapper shoes.
I think they were flip-flops.
I had big...
I had big beads.
I remember the big
beads. Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't like Halloween. I don't help the kids with costumes anymore, so I don't really care about it. Although last year I had a wig and I wanted to do something with it, so I came as Ozzy Osbourne
last
year.
That was great. You look just like Ozzy Osbourne.
Which I don't think is a compliment, because I'm a girl.
No, because your goal was to look like him, and you pulled it off.
But I mean, he's not by any means my favorite musician, but it's just I had the stuff at home, and I went and bought a bat and put some fake blood on it.
Yeah.
So
it's very convincing.
I don't know if I'm dressing up this year.
You started a tradition. You have to follow through.
I did
through.
It 1 year. That's not a tradition.
It's the makings of a tradition. Just
all
think
right.
about it. Can I ask a favor? We're out of time here, and I don't want to keep Henry Winkler waiting, certainly. So can we carry this over to the stream later on?
I think that's
There's a fine
idea.
Plenty of other years that we have not gotten to.
All right. Coming up next, we will talk to Henry Winkler and Lynn Oliver about the new book and their appearance at Anderson's. It's all going to happen right here, WGN.
In studio with us right now, Henry Winkler and Lynn Oliver. They have put together a fantastic book called Alien Superstar. They're making a couple of appearances here in town tonight at 57th Street Books in Chicago, tomorrow at Naperville's Community Christian Church, 1635 Emerson Lane. We will give you more information. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for asking.
Can I ask you,
yes,
Henry,
anything?
When you saw your schedule for this week,
yes,
and you saw that you would be on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon on Wednesday,
yes,
and our show on Thursday, which did you get more excited about?
Well, you know, I almost skipped Jimmy Fallon.
You did?
I wanted to get here to Chicago to make sure I was on time for being right here right now.
We are so happy. I got to be honest with you. I'm a little nervous that you're in the studio.
Is that true?
Yes. I've just been a fan of yours forever and continue to be.
You.
I'm sorry. I thought Fonzie was the coolest, and that was it. And now I love you on Barry. I love everything you're doing. You're just absolutely amazing.
Well, I have to say, I love doing it. I've dreamt of this.
Yeah.
And I'm living it. Oh, my goodness.
Lynn, how did this collaboration start between the two of you?
Well, Henry and I met in 2003, and he likes to say it was during a lull in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And his agent, his manager at the time, suggested that he write children's books about his learning challenges that he experienced when he was growing up. And he said, as people with learning challenges do, I can't write a book. And so his manager introduced us. I had been a children's television writer and producer and children's book author.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me his story of growing up with learning challenges. And it was so touching and so moving to me that we decided right then on the spot to create a character for children who has learning challenges. And that was Hank Zipser.
A version of you.
It is a version of me.
Yeah.
Emotionally, it is me. And then the comedy, we create and exaggerate.
Mm-hmm.
So that we never write down to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And the letters we get back are, how did you know me so well? Because even if you don't have a learning challenge that has to do with math or spelling or reading, every child has a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And they completely identify with Hank and his friends.
And especially now, kids have so many more challenges than we ever did growing
up. Absolutely.
Henry, your primary challenge was dyslexia?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was bad in every subject except for lunch.
He's still very good at lunch, I might add.
So, Lynn, when you find this out that Henry has suffered from dyslexia and has had learning challenges, how do you transform that into storyline? What's the process there?
Well, the first thing that we decided was that our character, Hank, would be smart and creative and resourceful and appealing, that this isn't a pity party for people who have learning challenges, because the kids who suffer from learning challenges are generally smart and appealing and creative.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a very particular thing that happens in school to them. So the first thing we decided was that we would write comedy and make this character approachable and relatable. And kids have really responded to that.
Have you worked in comedy before, Henry?
This was my first foray.
Was it?
Yes. I've always done heavy drama.
Yes.
You know, The Fonz was right out of Shakespeare.
Yes.
Yes,
well, it's funny
right
you
out of
say
tragedy.
That. Because can I tell you something that you did years and years ago? I hope you'll remember. When you were in the heart of playing Arthur Fonzarelli,
yes,
you decided to talk about Shakespeare and open Shakespeare up to kids that weren't familiar with it, and you changed a lot of people's lives with that.
That I didn't know, but we did Henry Winkler Meet Shakespeare.
Yep.
We did it at the Stratford Theater in Connecticut. I had friends from my drama school days and new wonderful actors I had not met before. And we put on a special, and it was terrific.
You made Shakespeare cool for people who weren't familiar with it. You really opened it up.
Thanks. I had fun.
So you have the kids' attention now with these great books and the new one, Alien Superstar. We'll talk a little about that.
Right. It came out yesterday, day before yesterday.
Brand new.
Brand new. New character, completely out of our imagination.
And our kids reading, and please don't take offense to this, but we need to get kids back to reading. This is one way to do it, to have a cool, funny, awesome book.
Lynn has always said that comedy is the gateway to getting reluctant readers into a book.
We find that kids, particularly reluctant readers, like to experience two emotions. They like to laugh and they like to be scared. We're better at the laughter part. So, but it's a way we call ourselves the gateway drug to serious reading, and we want our books to be the one that kids shove in their backpack or shove in their back pocket and read during their free time or read on the bus on the way home.
And that's key, reading in your free time, because when you're, you know, I read all the classics in junior high and high school, and my kids are doing that now too. But when you're forced and you're on a schedule, right, you can't truly enjoy it.
You slog through.
I never read those books. I would take water and sprinkle them over the pages
to make it look and then worn.
The pages would crinkle up and exactly like that look worn. So it looked like I was using the book, but the other kids were writing in the margins.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what they were writing. All I wanted to do was write something in the margin. You know, and I had, but Alien Superstar comes to Earth. Now, we figured kids like aliens.
Sure.
And kids are obsessed with Hollywood, being a star. And so we took our collective experience from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a collective experience in alienship.
Mm-hmm.
We've made that up.
Mm-hmm.
And we put them together and made this funny guy and kind of like a stranger in a strange land.
But it explores both the sides of fame, correct? That
yes.
There's some exciting parts, but then not so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the underpinning of the comedy is body shaming,
yeah,
bullying. What happens if he exposes that he is not from Earth? When everybody thinks that he is,
mm-hmm.
will they still accept him? So being authentic is another theme of ours.
I love it.
Because of your own learning challenges, you were led to believe as a younger guy that you couldn't succeed with what you had going on.
I believed it, and yeah. I was told it. You know, when you fail at everything, you think, oh my goodness, I'm just going to fail at everything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had Miss Adolph, who was my real teacher, who I think was related. She also, you know, said to me that I was stupid. And if you say that often enough to a kid, they believe it.
When you would go back and talk to your parents and say, the teacher is referring to me as stupid, what sort of reaction were you getting?
We think the same thing. Yeah, we agree.
Parents were weird back then. I'm sorry. I know my mom, too. My mom always had this saying, the stranger's always right. She'd always side with someone else other than her kid. That's how our parents were.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we're different parents. We're trying to be.
You know what? I told Stacy that I was going to try and be a completely different parent. Our youngest son just directed his third film. And when he was doing press, he said his biggest problem was that he was loved too much.
So he didn't have any strife to draw upon or something?
I guess. I said I would do it the same way again in a heartbeat.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Lynn, how many collaborations is this between yourself and Henry?
So this is Alien Superstar is our 35th book together.
Jeez.
In a short span of time, in less than 20 years.
Yes, and I think it's we started in 2003. Neither one of us is a math person. So if we started in 2003, let's see, that's over 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
But several of them were parts of series, and we love writing series together. First of all, because we both came out of series television,
mm-hmm.
so we love the idea of creating a set of characters who recur over and over, and the kids get to know and love kids like that, too.
Yeah.
And so when you've already explored the fundamentals of the characters, the books can come a little bit faster because you're not creating each one from whole cloth.
What's the best thing about writing with Henry?
The best thing about writing with Henry is that he brings snacks every day.
Yeah.
The second best thing, good snacks, I might add.
But examples. What are some of the snacks?
He stops at a bakery in Los Angeles called République.
Yeah.
And he brings French croissants and chocolate croissants and little pastries. But in addition to that, he's looking at me like, it's wonderful working with him because I think in his experience as an actor, he became very intuitive and very in touch with his feelings. So what he brings to it always is authentic feeling. And what would the character be feeling? What would the child be feeling?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is worth everything because the other parts of writing, the formal structure, you know, that comes. We both do that together.
Sure.
But the feeling of being able to replicate the character's feelings in a really authentic way, that's irreplaceable.
And we need to focus more on feelings now for everyone.
Yes.
Yes. We really do.
I have such intense feelings at this moment in time.
I can't imagine why, Henry. I have no idea why. Henry Winkler's here. Lynn Oliver's here. We're going to talk more about their book, Alien Superstar. Go see them. Go meet them. Pick up the book. It's fantastic. 57th Street Books in Chicago tonight, and then Naperville's Community Christian Church tomorrow. We'll give you more information.
And let me just say that if you come and say hi, and we do not leave until every book is signed.
You may be there till 1 in the morning.
Well, we've done that.
We've That's fantastic. That
but we think, you know, if you come and say hi to us, then our best job is to just stay and say hello to you.
That's pretty sweet.
It's so nice. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more discussion with all of us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Two guests in studio with us right now, Henry Winkler and Lynn Oliver. They've put together a great new book, Alien Superstar. You can meet them in person, live and in person, 57th Street Bookstore in Chicago tonight, and then tomorrow in Naperville at Naperville's Community Christian Church, 1635 Emerson Lane. Henry, a couple of months ago, my wife and I are at O'Hare Airport. We're flying into Boston, and we turn a corner, and as we turn a corner, there's you being flanked by two police officers, and I said to my wife, this is so sad. Henry Winkler is shoplifting, and the police caught him shoplifting.
And what I was doing was taking a selfie.
Is that what you were doing?
I've been here so many times.
I'm sure.
With, my wife, Stacy, since Happy Days. We came and played baseball,
at Wrigley Field.
At Wrigley
Field. I was there. I saw you guys play. They had the cast from Happy Days.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. My father got lost in the stadium. He was a little guy, and, and we lost him.
Did you guys just celebrate 40 years of being married?
41.
How do you do it? That's fantastic.
You know what? I'm asking myself the same question. There are ups and there are downs, and there are big ups and sometimes big downs, and then at the end of the day, you make a decision that you want to be in this relationship.
Yeah.
It takes work, It really does.
It
is. You have to nurture.
A relationship is hard work. It really is. Not necessarily just hard, fun work, but it is. You have to work at it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We were talking about the book that you're going to be promoting, Alien Superstar. Now, is there a specific age on this? Is this more of a middle school?
Yeah, it's intended really for kids between 8 and 12. It's highly illustrated. So we want all of our books to be a fun reading experience for kids, not painful.
Yeah.
So in addition to the comedy and the adventure, there are a lot of great graphic illustrations that make it a fun, breezy read.
Forgive me for not knowing this, but are there plans to turn this into a TV show or a movie at some point?
We don't know yet. The first book was just born 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Lynn and I are in the middle of writing the second novel, and we have a contract for 3.
Oh.
And we have no idea what will happen after that. But on this small planet, the dwarf red planet, there is this incredible alien who is 12 and 5/6 years old. And at 13, the government turns off all ability to feel and sight, sound, taste, enjoyment of culture and music, because they don't want anybody in the society to make a problem.
Right.
Everybody is in lockstep. His grandmother, Grandma Wrinkle, says, excuse me, not you. And she builds him a spaceship. She cobbles it together out of used parts because she is the master mechanic the squadron. He gets into his spaceship, and they only know one address on Earth. So he flies through the galaxy, and he lands on the back lot of Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to question a rocket ship? And we don't know how this happened, but he gets out. And he gets a job on a sitcom on Universal Studios.
Look at that.
And it is a stranger in a strange land, not only on Earth, but also in the land we work in, which is bizarre, Hollywood.
It's so fun to watch you tell that story because you get, like, as you're telling the story, you become a child. You know that, right? You become younger as you're telling that story.
I didn't know that, but I love the story.
Yeah.
I really do. And then he makes friends with the people on the in the cast. Mm-hmm. There is, of course, the bully. There is the guy who thinks he's the star. Young biracial musician who is actually the star of the show. There is a young man, Ulysses Park, who does imitations of everybody in history, including Joan of Arc. And our alien is very smart. He speaks 72 languages. Well, 71 really well, because he's having a lot of trouble with Hungarian.
Yeah.
Those consonants kill him.
I hear that's hard.
Yeah.
Do you see any parallel at all in what you just described with Robin Williams' rise as Mork on Happy Days? Is there any parallel at all?
Do you know what? Only because they are aliens.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, being there.
Yeah.
On stage 19 at Paramount, when they couldn't find an actor to play Mork, and on Wednesday, when we shoot on Friday,
mm-hmm.
we've been rehearsing since Monday, and Wednesday they finally found this young man. And when he came onto that set, I knew I had to get out of the way because I was in the presence of greatness.
Do you know who tells a similar story about you? Wendy and I had Gary Marshall on years ago, and he told an almost beat-to-beat version of that story about you.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you something. That is true about Robin. And I've learned everything about being an executive producer, about being an actor on the set, and the rules and the etiquette from Gary.
Did you?
And he always said, you know, a lot of people, they write important things. They make important television. I make Recess. And so, in a way, that Lynn and I do that too, except that it has this, you know, this meat under the comedy.
Yeah.
We all love Recess, though. That's the way to go. And with this world being so serious as it is right now and so divided, it's nice to escape it.
Yes.
Also, for kids, they learn to read by reading a lot. You get fluency by reading a lot. And you read a lot because you want to. So if you're slogging through the classics, not that there's anything wrong with the classics, but it's regarded to schoolwork. So if you have books that you turn to for love and pleasure and enjoyment, which as adults we get to do, we get to read People magazine if we feel like it.
Right.
Yep.
So hopefully that same thing applies, that Recess, the whole notion of Recess, we talk about a lot, that our books are providing Recess, but still increasing fluency in reading.
That's Lynn Oliver. That's Henry Winkler. Their new book is called Alien Superstar. You can meet them in person at the 57th Street Bookstore in Chicago tonight. You can also get a chance at Naperville's Community Christian Church, 1635 Emerson Lane. Thank you both for being here.
It's an honor.
What an honor.
Can
honestly.
You please just tell Henry Winkler about you wearing that A shirt and what you thought it would do for you?
When I was a kid, I had a Fonzie shirt. It was light blue. It was a cartoon version of you, thumbs up saying A. I was convinced that when I would wear that shirt, no girl could resist me. I would wear it to every roller skating party, any dance. Couldn't go wrong.
You know what? I have to say I'm sorry that I didn't try that. I'm not kidding. I'm getting that shirt out right now.
We love you, sir. We were so happy when you won the Emmy a year ago because you're so deserving of it.
That was so exciting.
Yep.
It's on my dining room table. Yeah. So that when the man delivers my Lipitor, I just it's right opposite the front door. I can say, oh, excuse me, hi, thank you so much. Would you like to see it?
Pick up Alien Superstar. It's available now. Thank you both.
And we'll sign it tonight.
Oh, that's the best.
Thank you so much, Lynn. A pleasure to meet you.
Great to be here. He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then he's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys.
He's Dean, 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 Dean.
Hi, D-E-E-E-Ean.
What a letdown following Henry Winkler.
No! Don't say that at all.
What a huge disappointment.
Please don't say that.
God, he's the nicest man ever next to you, Dean.
He truly is the nicest man possibly on earth.
Dean, everybody who's ever met him says exactly that. I've never come across anybody who says otherwise. It's got to be genuine, right? There's no other way around it.
I continue my search to find the person who will call Henry Winkler a jerk.
Well, there is no such person.
He had a dust-up with Mother Teresa a few years back. Remember that?
Right. I remember it was...
scandalous.
It was a big throwdown.
Yeah.
She pinned him on the ground.
Yep.
And, you know, it seemed like an odd... I remember the film clip, as though it were yesterday.
Yep.
Of Mother Teresa pinning him on the ground saying, "Who's your daddy?"
It was the first meme.
You guys are getting really way out there.
Wendy, it was the very first meme. People ran it over and over and over again. Would you say that Tom Hanks is probably a close second?
Well, I'm going to say Tom Hanks is a close first.
Yeah, uh-huh. Dean loves says yeah. Tom's the nicest man ever.
Mm-hmm.
We do love the Tom Hanks. I mean, not you know, they're both very very nice, but you know, Tom Hanks is Tom Hanks, 2-time Academy Award winner.
Yep.
You can be a nice guy and not have any awards. You know, that's going to knock you down a couple of pegs.
No, that's true. When Henry was done with us, Dean, you know how a lot of the big stars, as soon as they're done, they're out the door. They're on to their next move. He just hung around for a little bit. He co-signed a loan for Wendy.
I couldn't believe it. After he heard that Hochberg commercial, he's like, well, how can I help?
Yep.
How do you resist a read like that, honestly? Really? And I know I was, you know, looking on the social media because that's what us kids do in our spare time.
Yeah.
I saw pictures of him with people in the office.
Oh, they got to him first?
Yeah, apparently. Well, I don't know first or after, but, you know, they accosting Henry Winkler in the office because, you know, most celebrities love that.
Sure they do. Of course they do.
But you know what? He doesn't mind that. I mean, he said
he's used to it.
They're going to sign these books tonight and tomorrow night, and they will stay till everyone gets theirs signed. That says something.
Mm-hmm.
No, that means that's the difference between it. And you know, here's the thing. It takes about 5 minutes to be nice and stop to talk to people and take pictures. And some people get it, and some people just don't. You know, so that's why he's has the reputation of being such a fantastic guy, and I presume fantastic interview. I did not hear it because I'm here at a beautiful O'Hare International Airport, where I love to spend as much time as possible.
Where are you headed to?
You're going to be jealous today.
Uh-oh.
You're going to be jealous. I'm headed to Cleveland, Ohio today.
Dean, just for pleasure,
you know why?
Or for what?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Cleveland rocks. That's why.
Damn straight.
Cleveland rocks.
Yes.
I've never been there. I got to go.
It's.
I don't think I've ever been to Cleveland before either.
But your arms are tired.
I've been to what?
But your arms are tired.
I've been to many cities in Ohio. I used to have relatives. They're now passed away, but I used to have relatives that lived in Canton, Ohio, home of the NFL
Hall
of Fame. So I know that area in Dayton. I don't think I've ever been in Cleveland before, but certainly I'm looking forward to it. There's a show that's coming to Chicago called Jurassic World Live. It's an arena show. I guess it probably is going to be at the United Center, you know, one of the big arenas like that. And actual dinosaurs come to life in this show.
That's freaky yet cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a look at the show and give it a little review, and you know, we'll see what happens. I hope the dinosaurs sing and dance because I am a big fan of Michigan J. Frog, if you remember.
From
I know
the WB.
Bill, the WB Frog that sang, "Hello, my baby, hello, my darling." That's what I'm hoping one of the dinosaurs also do. Like,
well, Dean, I know that the producer of this show, of Jurassic Park Live, is Tommy Toon, so I think you're in for quite an evening of entertainment.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's behind this.
He is tall enough to be a dinosaur.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
He is a very tall, very, very tall man.
Dean, I wanted to discuss this so badly with Henry, but there were so many things to talk about with him. But I think there's a movie that he was in early in his career that I think is one of the funniest movies of all time. Can you guess what it is?
Night Shift.
Night Shift.
It still holds true today.
Yep.
Night Shift. I love Night Shift. That was one of my favorite movies back in the day. I'm going to guess... Is it the mid-80s?
Yeah.
Late 80s, I think.
And can I tell you something interesting that I wanted him to verify? But like I said, time kind of got away from us. The story that Ron Howard had told at some point was that he and Michael Keaton were supposed to have the opposite roles. And during a rehearsal, one of them said, hey, just for fun, I'll read yours, you read mine, see what happens. And everybody went, yeah, that's better. Let's keep it this way.
Yeah, it's definitely a movie. If you're not familiar, definitely a movie worth seeking out.
1982, by the way.
Mm. Wow. Wow. I can't even tell you what a full head of hair I had back then. Full, well, bushy.
We saw the clip on the special, on the anniversary special, so we know.
Yeah, that was right around then. That clip was right around 1982-ish, something like that. Full head of hair, Sally Jesse Raphael glasses, and ill-fitting, probably Robert Hall clothing.
Baggy,
remember that
was
clothing
that?
Star,
yeah,
Robert Hall
Village.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember that. Yep.
Yeah. Dean, didn't kids dress as you for Halloween that year?
Bill!
Yeah, they did. There were a lot of people. Big kids were coming to the door, and you'd go, who are you? Like, I'm Dean Richards.
I'll be honest with you. When I saw that clip on the 25th anniversary primetime special, it took me a second to, like, oh, my God, that's Dean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Who's that hottie creepy with the mullet?
I did have a semi-mullet.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was weird, you know. I think I had... I was sporting a beard way before any of the millennials.
Oh, were you really? Yeah.
I think I had... if I didn't have a beard in that shot, it was very unusual because mostly during the 80s and 90s, I was beard-toting. And then when it became popular, I got rid of mine.
You were the original hipster.
Yep.
I think so, yeah. I believe that's true.
Dean, the clip they showed was you at a telethon, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it might have been the
muscular dystrophy telethon?
Probably muscular dystrophy. And I was with Cookie the Clown.
Yes.
Mm. From the Bozo Show, the great Roy Brown. Did I ever tell you my... Bozo story. I don't know if it was that day, but one of the very first times that I was on the telethon, I was just working at a radio station, and they invited me to come down and be on the celebrity phones.
Oh.
Which, you know, I was very excited about that, to just sit on the phones and answer the phone. So they put me in this holding area, and while I'm in this holding area before I went on the phones, Bozo and Cookie... Bob Bell and Roy Brown are there, and you know I'm beyond excited. My people I grew up with are watching television, so I sheepishly walked up to them to introduce myself and say hello, and their backs are toward me as I'm walking up to them, and you know it's like. Excuse me, Mr. Bell, my name's Dean Richards. I just want to say I enjoyed your work. And, you know, they turn around, and Bozo's got his, sort of 1 foot up on a chair and 1 foot on the floor. It's kind of like leaning on his knee.
Yeah.
And so his gigantic shoe is sticking up on the chair, and he's smoking a cigarette.
Oh, no.
This was the best part, that I turned around, and Bozo, like, kind of turns around, like, who's bothering me? And is taking a drag on a Marlboro or something. And he goes, hey, kid, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Now let me get back to my smoke.
Got a cigarette? Not a cigarette? Want to smoke?
I don't remember him smoking much on the show, though, did he? Very little smoking went on during the show.
I don't believe we ever lit up
but
on
Dean,
the...
But, Dean, if you looked at bucket number six, it was just littered with cigar butts.
Yeah, right, and Vic lighters.
Wasn't there a picture of him with Jane Byrne? Although she was smoking in that one, I think. That's a famous picture going around, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think he ever did. Although there is there's an outtake a piece of video where Cookie was doing a skit, I think with Wizzo, and something happened. So you know that was the fun of the skits. That's why you watch the Bozo Show when you got older to watch all the things that went wrong and to watch the guys cracking each other up.
Yep.
But in one case, something went wrong, and a pack of Winston cigarettes fell out of Cookie's mouth.
Oh!
You could clearly see that Cookie had a pack of Winston cigarettes. Because Winston tastes good like a cigarette
should. Absolutely. That's Dean Richards, you guys. We're going to take a quick break and then talk about the movie everybody's talking about, Joker. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dean Richards is our guest. Dean is here to talk about the new movies opening this weekend. And the big one, I guess, is Joker. Dean, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the biggest ones of the year. And without a doubt, one that we're going to be talking about at Oscar time, both for the filmmaking, but certainly the amazing performance by Joaquin Phoenix, an amazing performance by Frances Conroy, who plays his mother in the movie, and Robert De Niro, who plays sort of a Johnny Carson-like talk show host who ridicules this character. His name is Arthur Fleck. That's what Joaquin Phoenix plays, ridicules him, and for which there is a consequence. This is an origin story. This is where we learn how the Joker came to be from the Batman movie. Although there is no Batman in this movie, there are quite a few references to the Batman legacy. If you're familiar with the story, you'll see lots of little familiar things, but it's not overridingly a Batman movie. It's really, those references are really just there for fans. It's a story of a very seriously mentally ill person who lives in his own reality. And when confronted with adversity, resorts to violence to resolve conflict. It's beyond creepy. It's beyond dark. It's beyond moody. It's a violent movie, but it's beautifully made. I was talking this morning with Justin Kaufman on Steve's show about what difficulty I had in kind of putting my thoughts together in this movie, because on one hand, I love the movie. It's brilliantly made. On the other hand, I was deeply depressed when I left this movie. I guess that's a tribute to the movie making, that it moved me in such a way, but it wasn't in a good way, and it was in a really kind of profoundly serious way, that this movie that's loaded with violence, that's loaded with the story of somebody who is mentally unhinged, who resorts to violence to resolve conflict, is just such a sensitive subject right now. Just feels like the timing is terrible for a movie like this, where we hear on the news almost every week a story about somebody like this who is living in their own fantasy. They're mad at somebody, and they take a gun and they go shoot up an office building. They shoot up a concert, they shoot up a school, they shoot up a church, because they're mad at either the world in general or one person in particular. It's very similar to all of that. Now, I'm not saying that my conflict with this is that I'm afraid it's going to spark violence. I don't know if it's going to spark violence or not. I'm not an expert in that regard, but I do know this, that after seeing all these horrible stories, and seeing so many parents and so many loved ones who are, have to deal with the remnants of this kind of literal insane violence, it's just hard to watch this as entertainment. I appreciate it as a great movie making, great movie acting, but it just feels too sensitive for me. I don't think I have ever been so conflicted writing a review before as I have with this movie. I gave it a Dean's List A.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this movie validates anarchy and validates violence.
But Dean, can I ask you, I haven't seen it obviously, but I'm curious. This is a story that we've seen before. There have been other characters that just don't connect with society. So why in this particular instance is the movie being singled out, saying it's got this dangerous element? What's different about this movie than other similar storylines?
I think it's just the timing. I think it's just the world that we're living in right now, with all the stories that we hear about right now, that this one, for me at least, just seems to resonate a little more in a personal way. On the same token, you know, we see movies all the time where, you know, somebody gets an AK-47 and they shoot up a place. You know, you see Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, mow down people. You see Rambo just came out. This is one of the most violent movies that I've ever seen. Why this one does is, you know, because it's so, I think, so close to what's going on in the news right now.
Dean's List Day.
And I'm torn too. I got to be honest with you. I want to see it.
Yeah.
And then I feel guilty for wanting to see it. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. That's how I felt when I left the movie. It's like, wow, this was an amazing movie making with this whole thing. I also wanted to take a shower when I was done. Joaquin Phoenix is so dark and so disturbed. It's clearly mental illness. That's part of this. And then, you know, I'm sitting there looking around the theater. I'm going, you know, I wonder if there's somebody like that in this theater right now who just happens to have a gun in their pocket and they get mad and decide to open up fire on something.
Spin, maybe society will see a character like this and say, maybe we should treat them a little differently. Maybe we should be friendlier toward the outcasts of society. Is that possible?
Look at you, Bill.
Yeah. Or here's another glass half full look at all of this. You know, maybe we shouldn't be closing down mental health institutions.
Agreed.
Like is happening in real life and actually does happen in this movie, which is, you know, sort of how the Arthur Fleck character goes off the rails when a mental health counselor that he is seeing stops because the facility is being closed down. So, you know, in that way, it does, you know, reflect all of this. It's a profoundly disturbing movie, but really well made, really well acted. Although a lot of people that I know have been saying that they've seen Joaquin Phoenix doing talk show appearances the last week or so, and really he's just playing himself.
Yeah,
because he's pretty off the rails by himself anyway. So anyway, Dean's List Day. My job is to review the movie on the movie making. So Dean's List Day for me on this.
Dean, we have less than a minute, and I know that Dolomite is opening, and that's the Eddie Murphy movie.
Hilarious.
Just a very quick. It's a very funny movie, isn't it?
Absolutely hilarious. It's a real life story of a blaxploitation X-rated comedian from the 70s called Rudy Ray Moore. Eddie Murphy was made to play this role. It is so 70s jive, over the top. It's hilarious. Eddie Murphy may be doing his best role here.
Wow.
I cannot recommend this enough. It's opening in select theaters on tomorrow, and then it'll be on Netflix October 25th, another Dean's List Day.
Very, very good. Dean, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Take care.
Thanks, Dean.
Fly safely.
I did hear him mention, because Heath Ledger was pretty great.
He was so good.
And this looks much more creepy.
I didn't think you could out-creepy Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker, but all indications are that's been done by Joaquin Phoenix, so we'll find out.
All right, and coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. And Henry Winkler was dynamite. I calmed down after I was able
to... You did quickly.
Because I had to just confess that I'm a big fan and I was nervous. And once I said that, I was fine.
Yeah. But you know he hears that every day, right? He must.
But again, I'm supposed to act like a professional.
There's no room for that.
All right. We're going to go to the stream, WGN Extra, the bonus hour, the stream of consciousness. But first, we're going to find out what's going on in the world of the Wintrust Business Lunch.
He was the nicest guy in the world, right?
Wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah. See, if you talk to him, Henry Winkler, he was. And, the legend is true.
And people kept approaching him, so, I mean, it was no big deal.
But you know what? We watched, people kept approaching him, and there was never another. He was welcoming.
He went to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Yep.
He hugged me. I didn't have to hug him. I had to hit the button here. He walked over to my side. I said, I'm going to come meet you in a second. Nope, he wouldn't wait. He came right to me and hugged me.
By the way, you gave me a homework assignment, Bill, because, and Wendy, too, I Googled and found the Love American Style
scene. Love in the Happy Days.
That I had no idea this show was based on that.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to watch it when I get home. Marion Ross was in it, by the way.
Oh, she was. I thought she was the only.
Richie Pozzi and Mrs. Cunningham.
Yeah.
And then you think you said Herb Gould was in it, too?
I think he played the day. He was Mr. Cunningham, I believe.
No Tom Bosley.
So you guys are going to go online and talk more about Halloween costumes?
Yes.
Is that the thing?
Yes.
What do you have coming up?
I'm going to talk to Ian Schur about what's going on in CNET. You know, the FCC won a round away when it comes to what's going on in with net neutrality. And also Microsoft is getting back into the phone business. So those are a couple of things we're going to talk about.
All right. And there was some breaking news about Robert De Niro that I wanted to share. Someone is suing him back for some kind of...
Well, he sued her or originally. Fired her. Yeah, because said she watched like 45 episodes of Friends over 4 days or something. And then she has countered now with another lawsuit.
This was an assistant of
his? An ex-assistant.
I guess so, yeah.
Claims harassment and discrimination. This is just breaking like within the last half hour.
All right.
But he sued her originally saying she spent all this money needlessly.
Yeah.
And now she's coming back and saying, oh, well, you were... you had creepy and abusive behavior towards me.
Oh, you made me do women's work, that sort of stuff.
I was your work wife.
Oh.
I should sue you.
Yep.
Or technically, you should sue me.
Right. That would be better.
I guess that might be.
Let's do it that way.
All right. Well, we've got all that coming up on the stream. And, of course, the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand. And Jen will take care of your news right at the top of the hour. We're gaining on 12 o'clock, high noon.
Wendy, a really quick plug for tomorrow. My best friend in the whole world, Grant Mulvey, Blackhawk great Grant Mulvey, will be joining us live in studio to give us a preview of the upcoming Blackhawk season.